Hey everybody, and welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And you still hate the episode?
And welcome to the show. Here we are wrapping up the series of Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. But we'll just preface it by saying this is not necessarily the end of the Game of Thrones podcast with Jay, Jack, and Nick, because there's more crap coming down the line.
We're doing all the sequels they're doing.
The prequels, right?
Prequels.
What's the next prequel coming up, Nick?
I don't think they've actually set a date. I would bet it was, because I know they're in production already, so I would have to say at least a year away, you know. But because the actors are starting to talk about it now, how it's completely different than Game of Thrones, and it's going to be, you know, interesting. So we'll see. I'll give it a shot.
Is that how they actually say it? It's like, it's going to be completely different than Game of Thrones. It's going to be interesting.
That's not, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it like that. But yeah. Because it's, from what little we know, they're calling it like a working title, but it's going to be The Long Night, which is, you know, how the White Walkers got created and the Night's King and why the wall went up. And so it's going to be, a 1,000 years or so before Game of Thrones. And I think it's going to be more magical, than more like the medieval times of Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Because, one of the big complaints was that we didn't really get any backstory of the Night King and all this kind of stuff. So, right. Is this show going to maybe they didn't do it in the final season of Game of Thrones because they're saving it for this show? Maybe.
Right. But, I've been thinking a lot about it since. I think a lot of people have. And the little things that they left out that should have been addressed, though. Yeah, you don't need to necessarily know the origin of the Night's King in Game of Thrones, but
I do.
Well, I'm saying, there's a lot of things that they really just kind of crapped the bed on. And, like all the spirals, that they were showing the symbolism of the Children of the Forest and the Night's King, that was completely ignored. Just little things that really could have been, I can get into this later in the episode if you want to talk about,
Yeah, we should probably save it, but yes.
Yeah. But there's a lot of stuff that was, could have been done.
So maybe if they were saving it for these other shows, will that maybe solve some of those frustrations maybe with the lack of backstory and development in the final season that people had?
No, I don't think the last season is redeemable in any way whatsoever.
Well,
wow.
Well, we are here. We wanted to do this episode mainly because we did kind of an initial reactions podcast right after.
I wanted to hear Nick complain.
The final episode.
Well, you want to hear me complain? You've come to the right place.
And right after the episode aired, we did it live for our patrons. We wanted a chance to also talk about the final episode, maybe the final season, when we've had some more time to digest it and maybe think about it and all those kinds of things. So it's not as raw if it is that way for some people, and also give time for some more feedback to come through. So that is what we'll be doing on today's episode, as well as I think we all watched at least all, if not parts, of the Last Watch documentary that aired.
Yeah, this past weekend. I watched half of it.
I think I
have 30 minutes left.
But
I have an amazing race, sorry.
We can talk about that a little bit as well. And then possibly, what's coming next? What's down the pike? What's on the horizon?
We had a question on Twitter I said I would ask Nick.
Well, let's save that for that section, right?
Oh, God. Right. Just remind me, because I just remembered I told someone on Twitter, yeah, I'll ask him.
We'll start with that, Jack, so you don't forget. But before we get into that, I want to thank people that make this show possible. Our patrons, especially Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, and Ed the Creepy Mailman. Did I get everybody? Was that everybody? I think that was everybody. Sounds right.
Sounded like six.
Yeah. And to all of our patrons, thank you so much. This season of Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick would not be possible, as well as all the other podcasts on the Jay and Jack Network.
It's not redeemable. You cannot. this podcast we have done has been terrible.
Well, Jack, I know.
We cut corners on it. I'm telling you.
Well,
wait till you see the documentary come out and see how hard and how much effort we put into this season of podcasting. Yeah. We got the lady. We got the lady that cusses like a truck driver. every other word is F you.
Well, well, definitely. I'd pay to see that documentary. Well, for the people that give $50 or more a month,
Jay, why are you always late?
We do the live show. We get to see us record one of these things live. So people kind of got that experience last week with our post live episode. So there's a little bit of that. Yeah, a little bit, kind of. All right, let's jump into this. Jack, why don't you ask Nick that question from Twitter that you got?
Jen on Twitter, at Sugarfree Sweetie, said, does Nick have a link to the article that says George R.R. Martin has finished books 6 and 7?
Oh, I put that up, I think, on our Facebook page.
Yeah, you did. You did, the one with Sir Barristan.
I mean, Sir Barristan, yeah, he's the one that said it. And, you know,
it was controversial because apparently it was immediately people were like, no, that's not blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of like denying that's the case.
So it's not true.
Well, I mean, George R. Martin denied it, but I mean, he could easily. I mean, why would you admit it?
But he was drunk.
Yeah, because I mean, it makes sense. I mean, much time has gone by. It's been 8 years since the last book. And I know that he was totally vocal about the disapproving of what D&D did with the show, and I think it's not because he you could see him through the seasons kind of start saying it like, oh well, the show's going to be different and do its own thing than the books, and you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think he in his mind was already thinking like, oh, I'm in no rush now to publish, because and then even if I did, people will be comparing the two constantly at the same time, like, why did you do this, why
he did is he saw the ending and now rewriting.
Yeah.
This is the last
or maybe not, no, even I, rewriting, he just he has written himself into a corner, and he's having a tough time landing the plane, and D&D kind of proved out the frustrations maybe he's having with his own writing. I know Nick's a George R.R. apologist, but for me, he crapped on my boy Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, so I got to stick it to him any chance I get.
Our good friends.
Yes. No response, Nick.
Well, no. I mean, I'm not an apologist.
You just keep saying sorry for him every
episode. I cling to hope until the point where someone craps the bed, and then I crap all over them.
So. I think once he takes off those Depends, I think he's crapped the bed.
I mean, he told D&D what they needed to know, that Dany would go bad, you know, that John would kill her, that Bran would be on the throne at the end. You know, he told them how Hordor, you know, what the meaning of Hordor's name.
Well, then it's not. So then it's not D&D's fault.
Well, it is in the fact that they had the key element. They had the key elements, and then they rushed it. You know,
I think if you watch the documentary, you can see why they rushed it.
I don't know how in that documentary, because that's the one thing I took away from it in the 1 hour I watched of it. Was that they read the final script in the fall of 2017, and not one of them stood up and went, this is shit.
You know? Well, didn't the actor play Varys kind of, he looked kind of pissed.
I think they were all
pissed. I shaved my head for this.
Because
he shaves his head.
But they all looked like nobody was being a resounding, this is amazing. Because, like, even Emilia Clarke, like, she kind of had that look of, yep. Harrington was getting emotional.
I don't know. Like I said, I had I haven't fully fleshed it out yet. But if you wanted to do it in 6 episodes, you could do it. You just couldn't do it the way that. If you wanted to do it in 6 episodes, you can't have Dany turn bad. You know, you could still have her die. But you can't rush that, and that's what they did. There's so many ways they could have gone with it and just kept it you know, at least pleasing. And I really think the biggest mistake they did was killing the Night's King in episode 3, because it just made everything else anticlimactic from that point on.
Well, I agree. And I think we said it at the time. Like,
we did.
Because we were like, man. But at that moment, we were saying, well, there's still Cersei, so that's going to take time. But we didn't even, like, do anything with Cersei, so that argument of why did we have Night's King first instead of and Cersei last, well, then they didn't really do anything, so it didn't make any sense. They should have done the Cersei thing first if they were going to blow through that whole sequence so quickly and then
I think we even said, we go, how are they going to – they got to regroup their troops. Yeah. I mean, there's no way they can just – but, you know, the queen wanted to go straight on, but – there's no way they had that many troops left.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to, you know, deviate from where George R. R. Martin was going to conclude, then just have her take over King's Landing. And then she's already, like, and maybe not necessarily have the Dragon Holocaust, but maybe that also helps with her going mad. And, you know, at the nights, you know, the long night or whatever, that could be, like, two episodes, and you could kind of also start seeing her descent, or then she gets killed or something. But I agree with you, Nick, completely. And I think in retrospect, if we would have closed with the Night's King's death, it would have been much more satisfying.
So you're saying they take King's Landing, then they fight.
Well, this is – okay. Yeah, exactly. Well, the finish – yeah, because the very first thing you see in the episode one is the threat of the White Walkers. Mm-hmm. So that's been the threat the whole time. Cersei was never the threat, and to have it in that way and then for her to die by bricks was even sillier. But no, like – okay, so if you were confined to doing it in six episodes and like that's it, like that's all you can do it in, I say leave episode one and episode two exactly the way it is. It's fine. I mean, they weren't great, but they weren't bad either. And then episode three, because you're building on this threat of the White Walkers and the Night's King coming down, have him actually win the battle. You know, like they put up a good fight, but the Night's King wins and everyone retreats back to King's Landing. And then you see them outside the gate. Cersei refuses to open them. She's like, no, you know, why should I let you guys in? You're a threat to me, all this. You have Varys, you know, because you've been also been building this Golden Company as these badass fighters this whole time. Then, like, you could do, like I've been saying, like, have Varys just be like, no, Cersei. And then, like, him snap his fingers or do something, and then all of a sudden the Golden Company flips, you know, and then they open the gates. Everyone goes into King's Landing. Jaime somehow, you know, whatever, gets to Cersei first, you know, and then she could say, I was never pregnant. It was all just a ruse, you know, and then, I don't know. I haven't really thought it all out.
But he kills her so that way she's not tortured or whatever or something.
Right. He kills her as a mercy or whatever.
Mercy killing.
Right, and this whole time, like, okay, remember in episode three when Bran, you know, rolls his eyes back and does jack shit. So let's just say this whole time he's been doing it. Like, even after they lost the battle, he's been just in a coma this entire time. So what happens is that all of a sudden he opens his eyes again, and what he's been doing is kind of like Doctor Strange. He's been going through the past trying to find how the Night's King was created. And he's already seen it, but we're trying to find his weakness. And so what he finds out is that in order to kill him, you have to destroy the original tree that's on the Isle of Faces, which is just south of Harrenhal. It's this little island in the middle of the God's Eye, this big lake. And so he tells John and he tells Danny this, like, you have to destroy this tree along with the Night's King. And then but the bad thing is all magic will leave Westeros if this tree is destroyed, because it's like the original Weirwood tree, you know? So at this point, when you get in towards the end of the episodes, the last episode, the Army of the Dead is upon King's Landing. But Danny and John both fly off, and let's just say both of their dragons, to the God's Eye to destroy the tree. The Night King is there. He fights them. And let's say he throws his spear, and it goes through Drogon, kills it, and mortally wounds Danny at the same time. But then John destroys, you know, Dracarys the tree. It destroys the Night's King and the tree, but because it destroys the tree, it also kills Jon at the same time. You know, there's so many things you could have done and had it be exciting at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my first thoughts, you know, over this past week.
Well, I think it's cool. I think it's a cool option to go with. But I think it kind of makes the point, like, you look at Avengers Endgame or like really anything, like, you end with the biggest battle, and they didn't. And
right. That's the thing. Now that the gold, in my theory, like, if now the Gold Company is working with them, you could actually highlight them, because, you know, the Dothraki and the Unsullied are pretty much wiped out. So just keep true to that. And so now you have the Golden Company with, hell, you could even have elephants. You know, like, it could have been a cool thing, but they didn't.
I thought a cool one would be if Danny, when they start the attack, she gets hit by one of those spears. The dragon does and throws her off, and she dies. And the dragon goes crazy and burns King's Landing. That way people are happy that their hero, Danny, didn't destroy and kill all those innocent people. She dies a hero's death, and then they get, and then Cersei, but Cersei actually put up a fight.
Yeah, I mean,
which was another complaint from people, that Cersei didn't do anything.
Right.
So and you know that the 1 week they couldn't figure out how to kill blow up the ships and all that other stuff, but the next week they could. Just got to hit their blind spot.
I mean, there's a lot of silly stuff in it, and that's one of the big ones. It's like, you have her flying, and the scorpions take out the one dragon, and it's like, oh, but then the fleet is three times, four times the size the next episode, and she wipes them all out in a few seconds. You're like, really? I don't know. There's so many things that are just silly.
But that's, and then you still have Arya kill Cersei. I think people are pissed that Arya didn't kill Cersei.
I think they tried
to please people and say, okay, she's going to kill the Night's King.
Well, I mean, let's just go to Arya, who's my favorite character. She goes through all this struggle, all this training, and it's cool that she took out the Night's King in the show and everything, but what was really the point? Like, she didn't, disguise herself one time this season. She didn't, show any of her skills off. So you're kind of like, well, what's the point? And then even at the end of, when she's like, oh, what's west of Westeros? Couldn't Bran just go, oh, let me tell you real quick.
It's called the Americas.
Yes. Don't go over there because the germs on your body will wipe out most of the population.
It'll be a genocide.
Yes. just stay put. And I mean, it's even with, I think we might have said this on the recap, the initial reaction, that they banished Jon because Grey Worm's whining like a little bitch. It's like, but he's sailing away.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't as soon as the Grey Worm leave, they go, all right, Jon, we were just messing with you. You can skid up.
Yeah. Well, that there's a couple of memes there of that where, they're at the dock or whatever, and that joke specifically. And
right.
Yeah. It's well, okay. Let me ask this question then, based upon just kind of discussions here. And Jack, I do want you to expand a little bit on your thoughts, because I know you did like this panel on Crazy Hank TV, and I think it was maybe a little bit more positive tinge than
it was
Nick's
a lot.
Feeling.
It was a lot more positive.
Which
than probably this one.
So I would like for you to kind of share your more positive viewpoints on this, so that we are including all thoughts.
What are you trying to say?
No, Nick, I love your thoughts, and I think they're valid. But I want to also showcase other, fair and balanced, whatever that's supposed to mean. But do you think the show would have ended better if George R.R. hadn't have given him the endpoints? And they could have just ended it however they thought they could have ended it. Because if that was... The thing that
Nick or me?
Both of you, if that, if, oh. I mean, Nick, but Jack, can you say something? But just if you
he wants the positive first, Jack.
Well, I'm just, but if the problem for them is they just try to get to these endings in six episodes, where there's no way they could have done it, would it have been better if they didn't know, so that way they had to write out an actual story.
And they could have done it their way, instead of going, okay, we got to make Dandy go crazy in six episodes. I even said on the crazy thing, the panel thing, I said, I see where people are complaining. I hear it. I get it. But for me, I was like, okay, it just wasn't the worst finale I've ever seen. And I go, it wrapped it up, and it didn't hurt its legacy for me. It didn't. I'll rewatch it again and again and again. And it didn't, but like, people that hated Lost, I'm never going to watch it again. I will watch it over and over again, BSG. But like, say, Dexter, no. That last season of Dexter, it was terrible, so it ruined it for me.
Terrible. But I mean, so do you think it would have been better for them to not have these endpoints that George gave them? Because now I think you almost also have to say, from George's perspective, he's going to want to rewrite the ending anyway, right?
Like, I don't think he will.
No? Okay.
He's been quoted many times saying that, it's like it does make you mad when, if you're writing a mystery novel and, the butler is the murderer, and then someone comes up to you when you're only two books out of four written and someone goes, oh, it's the butler. You know, it does bother you that someone figured it out, but you've also been setting up clues and little Easter eggs this entire time. And for all of a sudden you just to change midstream is damaging to that story.
Now would the books be better because he can go 400 pages on Danny?
Of course.
Well, yeah, Danny's descent into evil.
Right. And then that's the thing is that that's what books can do. And the fact that he is such a long-winded writer is that you'll see this transformation to Danny being bad more subtly. And you're like, oh, okay. And you accept it. Or it's the same as like, it, you know, I'm actually a little upset myself that I didn't call Bran being the king at the end, because Bran was the first character he ever wrote, which I have said on the podcast before. It was his very first thought about Game of Thrones was from a child's point of view, which was Bran of Ned beheading that deserter from the Night's Watch. That's the very first thing he ever wrote. And I was like, oh, it makes sense when that's just the first character he created would end up being the king.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, okay.
I think the ending, the result will be the same. It's just not how we get there.
Well, and I think in a book you can absolutely do it. Because to me, I'm not upset that Dany turned, you know, she had a heel turn. Because I think, I mean, you can just look at history and see how many times, like, revolutionary leaders, the power corrupted and they became, you know, despots or whatever. Like, it's been proven through human nature. So I think...
Well, also, that was the only way she was going to get the throne was out of fear. It was the only way.
Well, yeah, but I mean, then
at that point, it was
burning the
way.
Entire unless, thing was kind of crazy.
Unless she kills Jon Snow.
That was the other thing that really kind of surprised me or irked me a little bit, was that how did they know Jon killed her?
Yeah.
Is no, unless, no one else.
What's Jon Snow?
Room?
He probably said, I killed her.
Yeah, he could have been like, Drogon.
John's an honest guy.
All I know is that she was sitting on the throne. Drogon came in, was all like, he had like a hairball or something, and like just spit up the fire and she melted.
Well, yeah, the body's gone.
Littlefinger went
bad. Yeah, the body's gone. He could have played that.
But John doesn't lie.
That was the other thing, too, about Drogon. Like, I think that's a meme, too, out there. Did he just not want to kill Jon, or did he just go like, there's a sword in Dany, and that thing over there is made of swords, that's what killed her? You know, like,
no, he was saying, if she can't have the throne, nobody can have it.
Well, yeah, but it's also kind of silly to try and like project, you know, inner machinations of a dragon.
I speak dragon, so I know.
The dragon has thoughts on... you know.
Yeah, you can read it. You can see his. You can see his facial expressions.
Down with the monarchy.
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell. Some people can tell by just looking at you that you're lying. It's like the girl on Once Upon a Time. That was her gift. Remember, she could always tell when someone was lying. In fact, but people lied to her all the time.
Yeah. So that's, to me, then I think the biggest fault here is George R.R. telling him the end points. Because I think he should have let them just make their own thing. So that way, you know, if...
I thought that's what they were going to do.
I think he only told them, like I said, just three or four very select things. And that was it. I mean, I agree. Like, it probably would have been better. Or, I don't know, because their dialogue was pretty bad. Yeah, like they couldn't. I don't know who was writing it, but I mean, like, there's another meme that I saw, I think, yesterday, where when John says, you know, love is the death of duty, and Tyrion goes, that's a good line. Did you just make that up, you know, and it says, no, it's from season one.
I saw that one.
It's like, it's perfect. Because all the good lines were kind of rehashed lines from other seasons.
Yeah, it's true.
This season. So I was like,
Well, you know, anyway. It's one of those things where, still, especially what I appreciated from the documentary is just the scope and what goes into it, and the fact that they're able to like bring this to the screen, is incredible.
I would never knock the production of the show. I mean, it really did turn it into a beautiful, spectacle. The whole thing. This season, though, was a bit weird, especially with the King's Landing scenes where you've seen so many wide shots of the city being lush and green to all of a sudden, like, it's like a desert outside the main gate. And you're like, where the hell are you right now?
Well, winter. It's winter, right?
There's a drought.
Oh, it's a drought? Okay.
Yeah. The drought is coming. That was going to be season 9, but they didn't have time for it.
I mean, if you look closely, Deadwood is right next to it. Little puddles of water. That's about it.
It's not water.
All right. So any other final thoughts here before we get to listener feedback?
Well, are we going to talk about the documentary?
We did kind of. Anything else we want to talk about from the documentary?
For me, what I got from the documentary so far was the reason they wrapped it up the way they did and not had 10, 12, I think they were done. You could tell that it's such a huge production. They said every episode's like a major movie in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they show the makeup artists and special, the makeup artist going, working 18-hour days and not seeing her child. And she had to walk away from the camera because she was so upset. I think it just became, I think someone even said it on there, it just became too much. That it just became, it's just such an amazing project to do that it just burned, I think they burnt out.
Yeah, I could definitely see a burnout.
How we joke around how HBO said you could have more episodes, and they said, no, we don't. I think they were serious. No, we're done. We want to move on to other things.
Well, then give it to somebody else. Give the ball to somebody else.
Well, I'm just saying, that's what I got from the documentary, that a lot of them were just burnt out. That they just said it was just too much.
No, I mean, clearly. I mean, you look at Kit Harington, went into rehab and hopefully a speedy recovery and happy that. But, I mean, and I don't know if that was related to the production or anything.
It could have been stress of just,
So it's, but I think there's also a component of if you're going to do it and you're committing to doing it good, then, I mean, you should.
Oh, I agree. I just noticed a lot of people saying, this has been, this is just this, we have to do this and fly here and fly there. And it's just building those sets. And, the guy I liked the most was the snowman guy, the guy that was making the snow. He was my favorite person on the show.
Mm-hmm.
He just was very honest. He it turns out he was his parents. He didn't know his parents. So he was in, they don't call it foster care, whatever he was in. And they gave him like 300 quid or whatever it's called and a passport and said, okay, you're good when he was 16. And so was on his own. So he says, well, I do everything for my kids. I do everything. So I really liked that guy because he was, keeping the cost down, but it was a lot of work watching him, do the snow and pick up the snow. And then it really snowed and all that different stuff. But if you haven't seen the documentary, it is pretty fascinating.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's one theory out there, I don't know if you guys have read it or not, about that Drogon flew away with Dany because he was going to take her to another Red Priestess and get her to be resurrected. Because if you look the way she's laying on the snow, it's the same way that Jon was laying on the snow when he got stabbed.
Interesting. Now, are all the Red Priests and Priestesses' powers gone since, what's her name, walked away?
Well, she was just one of them. She's just like anyone else.
I didn't know if maybe there's like a pact between all of them once the threat of the Long Night is over.
I think it's in season 6. You do see one in Volantis.
Yes.
And you only saw her like one or two episodes, and that was it. And you're like, okay, what was the point of her? And she was a fan of Daenerys. She believed in her cause, whereas in Melisandre believed in Jon and Stannis the Manus. We'll never know, but it's just an interesting way to think about it.
Well, a lot of these actors have said they don't want to do any. I think Sophia Turner, Sansa.
Yeah.
She said no, I don't want to play Sansa anymore.
Yeah, I mean the HBO has already said there will be no sequel series. Everything will just be prequels.
That's what they say.
I tell you one, Jack, and you might not notice this. It's just an interesting little thing. The symbolism with Sansa, since you're a Team Sansa person.
Don't be bitter.
Is her hair.
Bend the knee.
If you look at her hair throughout the seasons, like season 1, she copies her mother's style of hairdo. Season 2 and 3, she copies Cersei. 4 and 5, I think she copies... what's her name? Tyrell. Marjorie.
Marjorie.
When she's...
So she's just a poser.
Well, she's showing who's influencing her, you know, like who is the one who she's envying or who she's admiring at the time. But when she's crowned Queen of the North, her hair is completely straight. And so it's trying to say that she's finally herself. You know, she's very much Elizabeth I in that scene, because that's the same thing Elizabeth I did when she was crowned. It was very straight to show that she was pure.
Oh, see, I thought she was because, you know, also had straight hair. Littlefinger.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, she could have went bald, you know, like berries. And, you know, Jack would have approved that because he would have been like, wow, she's really, you know, I like her even more now.
Yeah, there
you go. No, I think that's a cool observation. Nicely done, Nick. See, you still do stuff that's valuable to this podcast.
Well, I mean, I'm
it's not all hate.
It's not all hate. I mean, I mean, there's things I like to, I really think are cool about everything.
Did this final season ruin the series for you?
It didn't ruin the series for me.
Are you one of those people that say, I'm not watching this ever again?
Oh, no, I'll definitely watch it again. It's just going to be – so now I think now – because I had said that I don't care about, you know, see episode 4 or – which I didn't really like. I mean, episode 5, I didn't really like that a lot when Danny went crazy all of a sudden. But as long as they ended it well, I would have been happy. And they – it's just kind of a meh to me. It's not bad, but it's not great. But I think it'll be hard for me as someone who's never seen it or read the books. I think I'll just fall back on what I've always said, you know, watch season 1, then read the books, you know, because that way it gets the image in your brain of who the characters are and the locations and what everything looks like. And then if you want to continue watching it, do, but just know that the last couple of seasons aren't that good.
Because I know, like with going to another show, MASH is one of my favorite shows of all time. And when the finale came out, I didn't like it I wasn't really thrilled with it because Hawkeye loses it. But then when I do rewatches, I go, there's little, because you always think Hawkeye was a rock. Hawkeye, no matter how bad things got, he was a rock. But there were times that you could see that he was slipping a little bit every now and then, and it was getting to him. So when you do a rewatch, you go, oh, okay, yeah. But now, different with Game of Thrones, I've seen the first 5 or 6 seasons, you know, probably 10 times each.
It's funny how time, you know, you can either your brain will accept what happens and you end up liking it, or you'll just end up hating it more. Because, like, for example, I remember Star Wars Episode 2 when it came out, I thought it was okay, you know. But the more I watch it now, the more I don't like it, just because of a lot of cheesy lines in it and things. And I'm like, what were you thinking? I have always said that Episode 2 is the weakest of all the Star Wars films. But that's just me.
Well, wouldn't you say the hardest thing for a TV show is the beginning and the end?
Oh, yeah, because you have to, you know.
You have to get people roped into watching it. Because you only have a few episodes to do that. And the ending has to hit or people are going to hate it.
Right. I think the third act is always the hardest thing to hit, or the ending. Because you look at... I mean, I've always been a big fan of the first act because I like it as you're introducing the characters, you're introducing the mystery, you're introducing so many things that your brain can kind of speculate on, you know? And then I think that's the problem with a lot of things today is that with the internet and so many fans loving things that you have your own expectations. And if it doesn't quite line up with what your own expectations are, then you hate it. That's not how I feel, though. Because I didn't have any particular ending I wanted. I just wanted it to be good.
I did say this on the panel I did. I said, do you think if there was no internet and people couldn't go couldn't go on Twitter right away and go, everybody hates it. I must hate it too. You know, I'm not saying that everyone did, but I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that got swayed by public opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, like I said in our initial reaction, the last episode of Game of Thrones, I liked it all the way into the point where John killed Danny. I thought it was really solid.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of was just tying up loose ends really quickly. And it was kind of like, okay, you know, and like I said, it's just a meh ending to me. It's like, okay, you did what you had to do. And they did it the best they could for just a single episode, let's tie everything up. Because there's not many loose ends that are left other than just some of the mysteries. But
maybe have 7 episodes and have the last episode be the one where...
I think you need like 10.
I think you need the full 10. Yeah. And you needed the full 10, and you really needed to... Because you need the 10 just to make some... At least show Danny losing it a lot better than what she did. And there's so many things, like I said, like I really wanted to know what the spirals were about and some of the other things that they just never address in the show. And it's like, well, okay, what was the point of that? Like, and that's what I mean. Like there's so many cool things they could have done with Bran and they didn't, they just let him sit there and do nothing. And then, okay, you're the king because you have the coolest story. You have the most interesting story. Like, no, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, but remember it's Tyrion that said he had the most interesting story. Remember Tyrion in that one scene the week before this, I think it was the second episode, he goes, Bran, tell me your story or something like that.
Sure.
And we never
so why didn't they show it? Then that would have made more sense.
That's what I'm saying is that they put that in there for us to remember, oh, that's right, Tyrion had a long talk with Bran.
Yeah,
that's
but it's
a story.
But it failed because it didn't actually make us believe he had the best story.
I also think a lot of people forgot about it.
No, I didn't forget about it, but they didn't do anything with it.
Sure,
you had a human flashback machine, and you didn't use it to make the story more compelling. Like, you had this really cool mechanism, and look at how it worked when we finally got the reveal of Jon Snow's parentage. Like, there's so many cool things they could have done, and yes, they had that little it was kind of a throwaway scene because they didn't really expand upon it. That was your chance to show why he had the best story and deserved to be on the throne.
Right. I mean, and that's another thing that they kind of wasted as well. It's like you have this mystery of who is Jon's parents building up, because you even, you know, have Ned there telling that in the first or second episode, like, you know, next time we meet, I'll tell you about your mother. And so what's the point though at this point? So the only reason now for John to have learned who his parents are is just to potentially make Danny go crazy. That's it. So well, what's the point? It was the waste. It was what's the point of the whole thing?
The whole Robert Rebellion was based on that.
It's little things that will just bother me, and just the way that they sloppily just didn't answer or do things that they could have.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry for everyone out there who, you know, but you should be used to me bitching by now.
I think most people probably agree with you.
Yeah.
Well,
there was one other point. Right, go ahead.
No, please finish your thoughts.
I can't think of what it is. Like I told them, there is another one that I had on my tip of my tongue. But go ahead. It's fine.
All right. Well, that is what we thought. Let's hear what you all thought with some listener feedback. But before we get into listener feedback, let's have a quick commercial break.
Listener feedback.
All right. It's listener feedback time. We've got some.
I'm having deja vu.
No, I messed it up. I didn't even say it properly the other time. But anyway, we are going to jump into some email. This first one is from Jennifer from NC. I've been trying to think of another redemption story where a feminine character goes from being happy in a privileged position, gets knocked down, and climbs their way back up without the help of a man. I say feminine because it could be cool to see a feminine male version of a story as well. Please know that I'm not saying being feminine is preferable, but femininity is usually paired with helplessness. I'm thinking of fairy tales like Cinderella. After being sold, traded, abused, tortured, and raped by Ramsay so bad he only kept her face from being damaged, Sansa is definitely not wanting a Prince Charming anymore. Male redemption stories of privilege are common. There are many in the sports category. Marvel certainly has them. Doctor Strange, Iron Man. In the Marvel Universe, the female characters struggle, but they get their powers by accidents. They aren't earned. In the same way the male characters are, usually female characters who rise up are portrayed as scrappy fighters. But I can't think of a story where a character comes full circle. I also like that she's contrasted by Dany, who after being reluctant to be married off to Drogo, comes around to seeing marriage as a way to climb up. That's why she left Daario. Dany also was gifted her powers through birthright, while Sansa didn't acquire her skills of manipulation and ability to read a room because she is a Stark. I will say I hate that D&D wanted to make their relationship a girl fight instead of seeing two leaders who disagreed. one who wants her people to be independent and one who wants to rule by any cost. It's like they couldn't bring themselves to pass the Bechdel test, so they threw John in between them. Sansa's story starts out as a careful what you wish for story, then changes to the story of survival and redemption and growth. It's also a story of learning empathy and appreciation for what she once had. I love the scene of her in the snow when she sculpted a model of Winterfell because she wanted to remember. She said she had been a fool for believing in the songs and stories she loved. It's also the story of a changed worldview. Her relationship with Arya changed as well. She's accepted her for what she is now. All that said, I don't find Sansa necessarily good, but I like her story. However, at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if things go totally sideways in the last episode, and I regret everything I just said. The writing has gotten that bad. So this email was before, but I feel like she would be really pleased with how this ended for Sansa.
I would think so.
Yeah. I mean...
Everyone but Nick.
I can't think of any story off the top of my head that she's kind of wanting. But I used to, I've thought that from the first time I read the books, that Dany's story was Elizabeth, because like George R. Martin's inspiration for a lot of this is English history. And so I always thought Dany was Elizabeth the First, but clearly by the end of this, Sansa is Elizabeth the First, and that, like what you, like what Jennifer's saying, and that, you know, Elizabeth I decided to be the Virgin Queen because they kept trying to get her to marry people for alliances, you know, because like, oh, it'll make your power greater, you know, if you have a kid, then your reign is secure and all this. And Elizabeth finally just said, hell with all of you, you know, and I'm married to my country. And that's kind of what the ending that you got with Sansa, that she wanted just a strong, independent North. So, I mean, Sansa's story. I just see.
Well, I mean, we all know you hate her, so you don't have to like change it now.
I don't hate Sansa.
I detected a lot of hate.
I just am cautious of Sansa because I see.
You don't trust strong women that didn't need a man for their redemption story? Gosh.
You said it. I said it. You said it, not me. No, it's just.
You said it. I said it.
I just see a lot of Cersei in her. And I think that. It just depends on, you know, if you had another season.
Well, Cersei was a strong woman. She just was evil.
She was. But it was, and you know, and Sansa's not evil, but that's the thing. Their stories are so similar in that Cersei knew that she was the smartest of Tyrion and Jaime. And she was never taken seriously by Tywin.
She was more like her dad.
Right, she was like her dad, and she wanted her dad's respect so badly.
She was more cutthroat.
Right, and
do you think she was smarter than Tyrion?
I mean, that's debatable, but she believed she was smarter than Tyrion. She thought she was the, you know, she wanted respect.
Well, without Tyrion dad. Was written the last couple seasons, definitely.
Okay, but definitely. The first few seasons.
Right, and that's what I mean, is that she wanted that respect, she wanted that power, she wanted to prove to everyone that she was the smartest and the best person to ever rule the Seven Kingdoms. And Sansa is very similar. Sansa came, like what Jennifer said, she was the naive one who just wanted to be queen and have the, you know, and the romance and all that.
Well, because that's what she was taught.
That's what she was taught, yeah. But, you know, you see the same thing, with the influence from Littlefinger and everything else, that she becomes more manipulative, she learns to play the game. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, she's not as evil as Cersei, but I can see her going that same route. Like, anyone questioning her motives or her decisions, she's gonna not react to it kindly, because you see how many times she undermined Jon. She was fake undermining Arya.
But Jon was just in a cloud.
I know he was not a critical thinker. I know.
No, to be fair to Sansa, she's trying to be loyal to Jon. And John's trying to be loyal to Danny, and right. But Sansa's like going, "Wake up, dude! Wake up! She's not the one." And he just wouldn't. He's Ned, just loyal to a fault until he dies.
But right? He didn't die. He didn't die. Surprisingly enough.
I know, but he should have.
He did. Oh man! All right, let's go. Great email though. Thank you, Jennifer, from NC. This next one...
Even though Nick disagreed with it.
I disagree with it. Well, he might like this title. Sansa is totally Littlefinger 2.0.
See?
That's written by Nick.
It's from Kyle. Cranston. So
Kyle Cranston. Okay, there's not a name that's not made up, Nick. Good job.
Hi guys.
He's insulted one of our listeners.
Yeah, come on, man. It's messed up.
Do I know this person exists? I don't know. So.
Facebook them. First of all, I want to say how much I've enjoyed your Game of Thrones podcast. Nick, I entirely agree with you about Sansa.
Okay, come on.
I like him.
Come on.
And everything she went through. I understand people wanting Sansa to have her happily ever after. However, can we please talk about the fact that she is she completely screwed over Jon by telling Tyrion his secret, which is definitely one of the things that pushed Dany over the edge. She always wanted to be the Queen of the North, and she played the Game of Thrones by acting as Littlefinger 2.0 to get that. Plus, she claimed that the Northern people would never kneel again, yet they kneeled to her. Guys, what are your thoughts on this? Also, I disagree with the consensus that Jon got a happy ending by going off with Tormund and the other Wildlings. While I agree they are his peeps, I think his having to kill Dany will haunt him for the rest of his days. I sadly don't think Jon will ever truly be happy, which makes me sad because he's a good and decent human being, and it totally sucks that he got stuck at the wall while Tyrion got to go free and essentially lead the other six kingdoms. I know he claimed he didn't want to be the Hand at the Tribunal, but come on, he loved being the Hand, at least until things started going downhill with Dany. I'm not trying to diss Tyrion here. He's awesome. I'm so glad he made it out of the series alive, but it's definitely not fair that Jon got punished and he didn't. Thoughts?
On that part, I agree with Nick's email.
Well, let's do the first thing here, the Sansa thoughts. I kind of already know where we're going to side on this.
Well, I'm trying to remember what the show is called. Which it's called Game of Thrones. So Sansa played the Game of Thrones to perfection.
So Jack's taking the survivor approach. Like, what's in the title? Did she do that?
She's the Queen of the North.
Fair enough.
She won it by default. She's the only one left standing.
Oh, that's offensive to Bran. Jeez.
she was the best lot. To be honest with you, I still say she should have been on the Iron Throne, but well, it's gone now.
I think my favorite comment that I've read from someone was like, who the hell wrote this last episode? Was it Catelyn Stark? It's like, she's happy. Like, two of her kids are wearing crowns. One's out, you know, finding her journey. And the bastard that she hated all along got banished again.
It's true, though.
It's true, yeah.
That's a good joke. Thoughts about the frustrations that Jon kind of got shafted.
He did in a way. I mean, I said, like, that's what I said, is that Why did he have to go at all? He didn't really have to. As soon as Grey Worm was gone, who the hell cares?
He put the coalition together to, again, I keep putting this out there, that, you know, defeated the White Walkers. Why is he being banished?
Yeah, it's silly. Yeah. Absolutely silly.
He killed the queen that was mad.
Yep.
That killed innocent people.
And you're telling me that the Unsullied, they also knew that Tyrion, went against their queen, but they were perfectly fine with him, like, essentially setting up what was going to happen. I mean, it's kind of silly.
Yeah, because he killed the queen because of what Tyrion said. Jon was protecting his sisters. That's what I believe. Jon, when Tyrion and Jon had that talk when Tyrion was locked up, I don't think Jon was going to kill Danny at that point. I think it's when he pointed out that your sisters are in danger.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of decisions in it too, but the fact that she was saying, you know, that no one else gets they don't get a choice. You know, she was in those words, she was basically being a tyrant, which she was out to destroy. You know, I'm here to, you know, set people free, but yet those same people don't get a choice.
Mm-hmm.
She got corrupted.
Yeah.
Well, again, that's what I say. I think the power corrupts line works. They just didn't take enough time to get there. They just went that she snapped, which is kind of lame. All right, next email from Brad, titled "The Truman Show Ending." So this is the no-kidding summary of our finale viewing experience. Episode ends, about 20 seconds of silence. I say, The wife says, well, I'm going to bed. I have to get up early tomorrow. We built up to that moment for 10 years. You debated what ending this was for a television show, how I talked about it could be the Seinfeld ending, et cetera, et cetera. I say it was the Truman Show ending. Truman turns and says, in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Bows, walks through the door in the side of the dome. This is followed by some momentary fanfare, and then the two security guards say to each other, what else is on? Not the bang I think anyone's expecting or hoping for. Thanks, guys. And what are you covering next? Brad. Thoughts there? It does kind of go... It didn't leave a lot.
I know a lot of people have had... Because people... people were done. They just said, eh.
Let me watch Chernobyl.
Yeah.
I needed some cheering up.
Well, you also asked, what are we covering next? Well, we are going to still... This podcast will still cover the prequel series as long as it's not horrible. Fear the Walking Dead, anybody. So we will still be podcasting. And then... I believe we're doing a Watchmen podcast, hosts still to be determined. But I think currently it's tentatively Jack, myself, and Matt from the Ramblecast and Owen and Brew's Barbecue. We haven't confirmed with Mike, but Stranger Things is coming back this summer. I assume we'll be podcasting on that. I got my new Coke ordered, so I'll be ready for July 4th premiere.
The new Coke is the new Coke taste that no one liked?
Yeah, so...
Bringing it back just for Game of Thrones. Strange Things, yeah.
All right, so okay.
You can go to the Coke website or whatever, and they're re-releasing new Coke.
I didn't like new Coke.
Nobody no did. One liked that was Coke. The joke.
It was a gimmick.
Yeah,
But I don't recall what it tastes like, so I'm excited to have a few cans of that, just to relive the experience. Because apparently, in taste tests, they liked New Coke better.
Until people found out.
Well, so they brought back Coca-Cola Classic, but did you know that Coke or New Coke was then kind of renamed Coke 2, and was still around up until like 1999?
Really.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. I thought it was pretty much gone by like the late 80s.
No, it still hung around. Not wide distribution or anything, but it was still around.
They had all those cans in warehouse. They had to get rid of. It took that long to sell.
But if you drink Diet Coke, the kind of flavor profile is like similar Diet to Coke. That of Coke because – or New Coke because that is what it was kind of bred from. Mm. Little known fact. So if you have drinking Diet Coke or you like Diet Coke, you might like New Coke. It'll just be real sugar in it.
But it'll have sugar, yeah.
Yeah. Which you can't have, Nick, I guess. Can you have a soda or it'll kill you?
No, I will get the bottled Mexico Cokes every now and then for like a treat. I'll have like one or two a month just go like, oh, yeah, why not? I mean, I just have to compensate insulin for it.
Just have like multiple shots. Just like, all right, let's have this Coke.
This Mexican Coke is tasty.
Well, it's like 42 or 46 grams of sugar in a Coke. And so basically I have to give myself 5 units of insulin, which is like half a meal. So it's a lot. It's a lot of sugar.
That's a lot of dedication for a Coke.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's a lot of work.
You have to give up a lot though. Like I gave up all juices pretty much because of sugar, and then all sweet tea, but mostly anything you can't judge what the sugar content is, you pretty much have to give up.
Well, I mean, it's tough. It's gotta be more tough for a Southerner just because you guys put sugar in everything.
Everything.
It's either fried.
No, I don't even like tea.
It's either breaded and fried or just gobs of sugar.
That's right. I can't imagine if I couldn't eat pork because you couldn't live in the South at all because it's in everything.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, you want green beans? Well, you know, there's pork in those. And green beans? Yeah.
Wait, there's pork in green beans?
A lot of people, when they make them put ham on. You're
Southern style.
Okay.
All right, last email here titled Jon Snow's Ending from Liliana. Hi guys, just two comments here. One, in general, I really enjoyed the complete season 8. I loved episode 3, The Long Night, and was very happy with the series finale. I'm actually very annoyed by all the negativity that many fans have showed. I don't know if she's made it this far into our episode. surrounding the end of this show. Some constructive criticism is always interesting. I guess this just shows that people felt very strongly about Game of Thrones, which you cannot say from just any show. Second comment. I was wondering if the end of Jon Snow really meant that he rejoined the Night's Watch just to die. As Melisandre said, she had brought him back for a purpose, and that purpose is now fulfilled, i.e. to kill Dany. It is hard to think that the Lord of Lights would have yet an important purpose for him to accomplish north of the Wall, now that there's no conflict in sight. Anyway, I love the Jane Jack podcast. Liliana.
And the other guy.
Yeah, I started to say that with the other email about Jon Snow's. I agree. Like, I felt that he was brought back for the purpose, and after Dany died, something should have happened to him as well.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it's, you know, maybe because his body is still intact, you know, like, because you can't judge with Beric Dondarrion, you know, because he was stabbed multiple times, and that's why he died again.
Yep.
So, you know, if something unfortunate accident happens to Jon, I'm sure he'll die. But
I mean, I guess everyone dies eventually.
Mm.
So it'll get him eventually.
Yeah.
Oh man, well, thank you everybody for your feedback. Thank you for everybody listening to this podcast. I know the history of the Game of Thrones podcast on the Jane Jack Network was not always a great one. It started out with just Jack and I and quickly burned out pretty quick.
Yeah, that was a mistake because we recorded 5 podcasts that day, and we always did Game of Thrones last.
Yeah, and I think
by then, it's like after 7 hours of podcast, I go, what's this guy's name?
I think the shows ended up being like maybe 15 minutes or something like that. It was so bad.
Yeah, it's like, I can't do it anymore.
So I don't know, what season did we bring you on, Nick? Do you remember?
I think it was season 5, because I think this is our 4th season.
I think we talked about it at Comic-Con, right?
We did. That what year was that? 2000? I don't know. Oh, for me to join the show? Yes, because I had told, I think, Jack or J1 after you guys had quit doing Game of Thrones podcast. I was like, you know, if you guys need help, I'll help you. And then nothing ever came about it until finally, you know, around, I guess it had to be for the start of the season 5.
I think you're right.
You guys were like, oh, Nick, do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I wish we could have done it sooner, but. Oh, well.
Well, you know, there was just a lot of wounds. They needed the heal. Yeah.
I think we had some of our worst reviews on that podcast. And it's funny, because usually you kind of go, that's just a dumb review. But I think I went to Jay, I go, you know, they're right.
Well, and I'll just say that thank you, Nick, for joining us on this podcast. Because I think
I wouldn't have done it.
There is a marked difference, a 100% increase in quality in the show once you join the podcast.
You know, slack for Jay.
Absolutely. I will absolutely back that up. But either way, it has been fun. You know, here's to whatever comes next in the Game of Thrones universe. Jay, Jack, and Nick will continue to talk about it. And so do not unsubscribe. Keep subscribed to this podcast. And there's a lot of other podcasts on the Jane Jack Network. If this is the only one you have listened to, definitely check out some of the other stuff. We just finished up Survivor with Jay, Jack, and Colleen. I don't know how much left is of Amazing Race, but Jack and Cindy do that show. The Jane Jack Show, which is a show in which Jack and I just Jay and Jack, and we also interview some friends every single week. That is coming back next week with Ryan and Jen from The Transmission.
Can't wait to talk to them.
Will be joining us. So that will be kind of taking place of where Game of Thrones was on Mondays. Jay and Jack show will come back on Monday, so definitely subscribe to that. And Ramblecast After Dark, RCAD, is a show with a bunch of dudes. Namely Jack, Nick, Boston, and Matt. Every single week, talk about
No fan favorite yesterday, though.
And the broadcast, which has Colleen, Amanda, and Shandy, is another fun show that's generally Rampcast After Dark and broadcast is always kind of going on. It's very rare that those aren't happening. The rest are generally around the TV show.
Those two, we're like a machine.
And Stranger Things is premiering on July 4th. So Stranger Things with J-Jack and Mike will be coming back this summer. And then
Westworld.
I don't know when that's – the new trailer, though, looked really cool.
I want to say it's spring 2020.
That's what I thought.
So be on the lookout for that. And then Watchmen premieres this fall. So there will be a podcast for that as well. All right. I think that wraps it up, guys. Anything else you want to say as we close out this season?
No, it's been fun, guys.
I'm going to mess it.
Well, again, it's not going away forever. Whatever this new The Long Night or whatever comes out, we'll be here.
When's it supposed to come out, anybody know?
No one knows. Yeah.
Maybe a year from now? Who knows?
I would say a year from now. Yeah.
So you may see us in a year. Until then, there's going to be a lot of Jane Jack podcasting that you can listen to. Actually, you know, I think Owen and Bruce Barbecue is our Star Wars podcast, which, Nick, you are a part of.
I am.
And with the Disney Plus app coming out and all the Star Wars specific shows, my guess is, you know, I don't know if you guys have the time, but that show will pick up as well in terms of releases.
That'll get kicked into overdrive. Yeah. Because, yep. Normally, Owen and Bruce is just when we want to talk about Star Wars, and but with all the new content that's going to be coming out over these next several years, yeah, I would imagine Matt and I in particular will be very busy.
And they have hats.
We do. I have not seen it yet.
It's pretty cool.
Wait, they have hats? What?
Matt ordered hats.
Oh, cute. That's awesome. All right, that is it. We'll see you all next time. Hasta luego. And goodbye.
Vala Mogulis.
Bye.